Welcome to the new Cyber Frontier, bringing you the latest news on the local Colorado economy and initiatives that focus on the development of cybersecurity economics. You don't have to be a computer or cybersecurity expert to get plugged in. Your host, Chris Gorog, brings it straightforward, asks the tough questions, and brings the cyber world to a level of understanding for everyone. Chris is personable and opens up with our guests on the issues we all would like to see addressed. You can find us on the web at www.newcyberfrontier.com. Now join our host as he introduces the topic for today's New Cyber Frontier.
Welcome back to the New Cyber Frontier. Today we have again our monthly DC, Washington DC Cyber Update with Chuck Brooks. So welcome today, Chuck. Is there anything pressing you have going on you want to start out talking about from Washington DC?
Well, there's a lot of things happening. I'll start with a few. The first thing that I would like to mention is that, because it relates to one of our earlier calls, is we were talking about the cybersecurity threat to the electric grid. Mm-hmm. Yesterday, the Department of Energy released a report outlining just how vulnerable the grid is to their 7,700 power plants and 55,000 substations. It was released by Secretary Ernest Moniz. And it called for emergency action and regulations because they acknowledged that most of the control systems, the SCADA control systems used to secure the grid, were built in the 80s and 90s. And, of course, the hardware and the software needs serious updating. So I think it confirmed a subject we talked about earlier.
Now I've heard that same type of report, though, for years, Chuck. What's different about this one?
I have, but it has never been so much, I guess what you want to call it, a bipartisan push. There's been a group of people who have been pushing it. You know, the grid, it's from electric storms, from cyber. You're right, and led by Congressman Trent Franks for the last 4 years. But it has, until I think Ted Koppel wrote that book, and until now it's become more of an intent, or now that Moniz has come out with this, I think it's really become sort of a nonpartisan issue is a better way to put it. And now I think it's actually time that something could get done because now we're seeing what happened in Ukraine, with the attacks there when they took out power for 700,000 people, how easy it is to do, if we're going to do anything, critical infrastructure is what needs fixing first.
Now, I hope that's the case. I mean, I've been praying for that for years now.
Yeah, no, you're right. But I think there's also more capability now, particularly from the cyber side, to actually implement process systems and more security. We have the technologies, and a lot of it is now just funding it and having a strategy. And at least with the energy grid, it's fairly simple. The systems. I mean, the problem is really the rural outlets there, and there's a lot of vulnerabilities in various areas. But it can be done and should be done.
Yeah, now, Chuck, I almost would disagree with you a little bit there without saying disagree, but I think in a lot of cases the technologies for securing critical infrastructure doesn't really exist. I mean, if you look at what we were just talking about, how that there hasn't been the economic driver to make this critical infrastructure secure, well, that economic driver would be poured into the research and development, which hasn't really happened yet. So I would say that, a lot of these systems that need to be there for critical infrastructure security don't really exist yet.
Yeah. Well, I do with certain things. And I'm talking about SCADA systems specifically and for nuclear. And I think there has been enough research and development and interest in that. Mm-hmm. It just needs to be updated. But you're right, across the board with critical infrastructure, just take our hospital systems and Internet of Things with, 20 billion Internet of Things connections in 2020. There's really been no thought of protection. Hospitals are now being taken with the ransomware. Corporations, 66% of report that they are unprepared for a major attack in the Ponemon Institute report last year. So you're right, there's a real vulnerability, and there's a real lack of taking what is available and looking, and more important is developing a strategy, because technology is not the sole answer. It's basically a awareness, assessment of vulnerabilities, and protecting the network from the endpoint to the network system. So there's a lot that goes into it, but I think we're behind on cyber.
We'll be right back with the rest of today's show right after these brief messages from our sponsors. Cyber Resilience Institute helps build strong cyber communities designed to prevent members from attack. Like building a neighborhood watch, it takes coordination and a sharing community to protect our identities and valuables in the virtual world. Typically, we hear that organizations know they need to do something to protect their cyber assets, but don't know where to begin. Let Cyber Resilience Institute help your community create an action plan. Cyber Resilience Institute will build your community or business marketplace so that it is designed to support a collective cyber defense. Contact them for more information at cyberresilienceinstitute.org.
So there's a lot that goes into it, but I think, you know, we're behind on cyber. We are just catching up. And I think going back to the political thing that's happening, it's in the news now, and people are talking about it. And the recent appointment of Tom Bossert, who's known for his cyber risk management efforts, to be the sort of head of the Homeland Security Council or advisor, a cybersecurity mission for President-elect Trump, is a good sign. But, you know, it really is not just the government. It's you know, 80% of the critical infrastructure is owned by the private sector. So, you know, government can only do so much.
Now, tell me about this appointment. You're familiar with Tom Bossert. So what is the relevance of him being involved? And what do you think that he brings to the table?
Yeah, well, I'm looking, and it's not, you know, it's speculative, because no one really knows exactly what's going to happen in a new administration. All we know is that they're appointing people that have a strong sort of military background, some cyber, and there's certainly a focus in the news with Russia and everything else on cyber vulnerability. Yeah. So all I can go is what basically the president-elect said in his campaign. The first thing he was going to do in office was create a review of all U.S. cyber defenses and vulnerabilities. And I assume that Tom will be part of the team or leading this team that will do that. And this is primarily aimed at critical infrastructure. So once this cyber review team is assembled, which will be people from DOD, DHS, Justice, DOE, everywhere, and private sector people. So I think then they'll probably come up with a strategy and game plan. But the last administration left a sort of a game plan to follow, which sort of talked about this public-private partnership efforts and what needs to be done with information sharing. So they could take a lot of lessons learned from that and then come up with more specific recommendations. I think really now with administration, it really comes down to who has control over what portion and what realm of cybersecurity. As you know, cybersecurity is a very sort of a generic term. And it encompasses so many different things. But the military's perspective of vulnerability is a lot different than the civilian sectors. To work together and come with a comprehensive cybersecurity plan is still going to have to – part of that is going to have to be towards creating – and there's talk of it, maybe a separate agency that would oversee all of this, or delineating better the responsibilities of various federal agencies in dealing with the crime. And you know, because it's a real problem. And it's not going to get fixed.
Okay. Do you see like a national cybersecurity agency coming up, kind of like the Department of Homeland Security, or do you think it gets rolled into the Department of Homeland Security? What do you see coming down the road in the future?
You know, I think there's a potential for both. I think that last session, Congress allocated $1.1 billion to sort of redefine Department of Homeland Security's mission, which are National Plans and Protectorate Directorate. And then it passed, and there's funding, and they want to, you know, DHS was basically thrown into this for the last 5 years, and it wasn't a really big priority in their early mission. So they're sort of catching up too, but they're given responsibility now for protecting all .gov domains and basically all civilian parts of the sector. So DHS is going to, you know, play a major role, I think, and I think the intelligence community will try and play a big role. Pompeo, Congressman Pompeo, will be the head of the CIA, and he has a strong interest in background cybersecurity, so that should be of interest. But in creating this thing, I think what will come out of this sort of a study that happens that they call for in the campaign will probably be recommendations. Do we want to create a special entity to oversee it? And the other thing that may happen is Homeland Security Council and the National Security Council merged under President Obama. They may decide to separate it back out again because there are, I think, separate missions for cyber that need to be sort of standalone and focused on rather than try to integrate everything into the national security roles of NSC. So, you know, I would be in favor of sort of pushing it out again and creating that council and building it up. And I guess, again, that would probably be more where Tom Bossert would play a role. But I think it's too early for anyone to know what's going to happen.
You know, while you were talking, I was thinking, I heard you talking about people from the CIA, people from the Department of Homeland Security, and the new appointee having a risk management background. And this is critical infrastructure that we're talking about. And people from those backgrounds have more of an information security, risk management, where they're looking at it almost from a business level, like a CIO type of a background. But we need people from looking at it from a critical infrastructure background. We need to involve Department of Energy people and from that background, Nuclear Regulatory Commission, somewhere where we're looking at even interstate commerce, where we're looking at people that have that millions of devices out in the field type of thought process where the IoT looks at a different way of securing things. What do you see as far as appointees or people coming in with that background that are going to be in these central positions?
Yeah, well, I know Admiral Jay Cohn was one of the people that had interviewed with Trump publicly. He has a strong background. He ran Navy research, dealt a lot with systems and sensors. And he also is head of science and technology undersecretary at DHS. He'd be, his expertise is in cyber. So he's the kind of person you're talking about. But I agree. I mean, the Department of Energy is a practical training ground for protecting critical infrastructure. And not only that, they have the national labs, which is our, yes, I think, our nation's greatest asset. You have the best and the brightest. We've developed all of our missile capability or satellite capability, you know, out of Los Alamos and others. And to take some of these giant minds and involve them in the cybersecurity effort would be a very smart thing to do. And I would recommend, if I were part of this team, that we look at DOE and look at them making them play a major role in forming, you know, basically strategy and structure, particularly with hardware dealing with cybersecurity. Yeah. So that, yeah, I agree with you 100% on that.
Yeah, you know, I personally have worked with like the Renewable Energy Laboratory out here in Golden, Colorado, and some other institutions that we've spent a lot of money with our government building these great research institutions. But then even some of the money that's set aside for research and development hasn't gone into those institutions. And I've seen it go other places, and I've been as confused by it as some of the researchers that I've worked with. We need to really address that problem from the top down and put our research dollars where we have these institutions that can really make a difference. And I think that's one that needs to be addressed.
Yeah, I agree with that, too. I'm a big proponent of R&D funding for science and technology. I think the National Science Foundation, I think Homeland Security Science and Technology Director, DOE Labs, of course, and DOD Labs also are great resources. But really, if we're going to compete on an international stage and develop the best and the brightest technology in cooperation with academia and the private sector, the labs are the perfect vehicle and funding R&D. You know, the dividends have always, you know, paid well. They did tremendous amount of advancement from the NASA's quest for the moon. Half of our products we've developed and technology came out of that. So I think, it's a very good investment for the government to do. And if you look at the giants in the private sector, the Googles and the Apples, and they're putting a good portion of their efforts in R&D too. So, you know, there's no reason that we should be so blind and so sort of cheap with funding R&D. If you're looking at, I think, you know, again, paying dividends and developing capabilities and actually training people for jobs, you know, research and development is really a core, I think, for government.
We'll be right back with the rest of today's show right after these brief messages from our sponsors. Cyber Resilience Institute helps build strong cyber communities designed to prevent members from attack. Like building a neighborhood watch, it takes coordination and a sharing community to protect our identities and valuables in the virtual world. Typically, we hear that organizations know they need to do something to protect their cyber assets, but don't know where to begin. Let Cyber Resilience Institute help your community create an action plan. Cyber Resilience Institute will build your community or business marketplace so that it is designed to support a collective cyber defense. Contact them for more information at cyberresilienceinstitute.org.
For jobs, you know, research and development is really a core, I think, for government.
And you know what else? I think what falls in line with that, that I just keep saying and like to reiterate again, is that, you know, we need a way with the money we're spending with our government to find a way to value and have virtual assets as a kind of an outcome of that spending. Because right now we have so many, the need for kind of how we've done things is to have a physical outcome, a physical product or a physical building from our government spending. And the community projects that are required in cybersecurity, and especially with critical infrastructure, are not going to, they're going to benefit everybody. They're going to be a community project, but they might not have a physical facility or physical nature to them, or something that the government has that can put on the books. So we really need a way to value and track the value of virtual assets funded under our civic projects in the government.
Yeah, no, I agree again on that too. I mean, that we're going through a paradigm shift in our industrial perspective here. We are going more virtual. We're going to more as a security as a service, integrated systems, and more use of sort of in you know predictive analytics and artificial intelligence. So, it is really logical for us to look at you know this paradigm in a different way, and the dividends, like you say, are going to be paid in different ways. It's not a building, but it really is IP,
yeah.
And IP is shaping the world, shaping the economy too right now. And like you said, from the giants, they're all looking to invest heavily in artificial intelligence, and there's a reason for that.
Yeah, and the outcome of a cyber project that we would do to benefit everybody, benefit society and everybody, and we have to kind of help to shape the understanding of people who are so used to having a physical asset to put a value on, to understand that there's a value here, even though it is a virtual cyber asset at the end.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. And I think it's maybe, you know, it's a new administration, it's a new opportunity, and part of that, that is done in media too, and that's what we're doing. And I think with the new social media networks, you know, the LinkedIn's and others, that there's a way to communicate these ideas that weren't, you know, heard by many people before, but now are picked up by thousands. So,
yeah.
I think there's a reason to be optimistic.
Yeah.
And you're right. The consequences of doing nothing are catastrophic, and we've been lucky so far. But you know, we're going to have situations where just a denial of service attack could bring down, you know, a whole, you know, healthcare system, and
yeah.
What would happen then? So there's things to contemplate that we haven't thought about in the past, now that we're interconnected.
Yeah, so anything else that you want to get out news-wise from Washington, D.C. there, Chuck?
No, I think those are the big ones. You know, I think there'll be probably, it's relatively slow in the appointment process. They haven't filled the cabinet yet, but there are people being contacted, and they're filling some of the key positions. But I think, you know, we're going to have to wait probably a couple months to see what comes out of all the hiring. And, you know, that happens in any administration, but we haven't had it really do it in 8 years. So it's going to be interesting to see what unfolds. And also Congress just came back last week. And so, you know, it's very early in the process, and most of it's going to be confirmations coming up. So, but, you know, attacks keep happening. And so there'll always be something happening in the news of cybersecurity.
Yeah, and also remember to vote for Chuck Brooks. He has been nominated by the Cybersecurity Excellence Awards for Cybersecurity Marketer of the Year. And also please vote for our show. This New Cyber Frontier show has been nominated for Best New Cyber Education Series of the Year. So please, we could definitely use your vote, and we would love to have your support. In closing, Chuck, anything else that you would like to get out about either your organization, your company, or you personally to our audience?
My recent article in the Federal Times last week spoke about what's next for DHS and cybersecurity. So check out the Federal Times and go to the, you know, have a feature column there, and you'll see the article.
Well, thanks for joining today, Chuck. We definitely appreciate your input and your contribution to the new cyber frontier. Have a good day. Thanks a lot.
You too. Take care.
We hope you have enjoyed this episode of New Cyber Frontier. Remember to get involved. Often we think that someone else will handle privacy and security in the virtual world, but you are the only one truly in command of your virtual fate. Join our mailing list so we can keep you informed of breaking news and new releases. If you have an idea, if you have a question that you would like to hear answered, or if you want to get involved with our efforts, reach out to us at newcyberfrontier.com. We also encourage you to visit our sponsors' links, as they are the ones that really make this show possible. I want to thank each of you for supporting the show, and we look forward to seeing you back for the next episode of New Cyber Frontier.